Hello and a warm welcome to the Football Postcast here on The Racing Post, your one-stop shop for football betting insight. We've reached the knockout stages of Euro 2020 and it's really starting to hot up. To preview the next round of fixtures, it's Jack Reeve joined alongside Joe Casey and Aidan Perkins from The Racing Post Sport Desk. Great to have you both alongside me today. And Euro 2020, Aidan, it's been a real delight so far.
Yeah, I think it has, Jack. I think, you know, it's been great to see the fans back in a lot of the games. I mean, you know, some of the stadiums have been still sort of half full, but you know, it's been a real sort of pleasure watching football again. It feels like you're watching proper football, doesn't it? And some of the games have been great as well. You know, we've seen some absolute classics, haven't we? That Germany Portugal game was brilliant. The Denmark one where they sort of, you know, came back when no one thought really they had much of a chance of getting through on the final night of their group game, and you know, in front of all their fans. It's been an emotional tournament for them, of course, as well, with the Christian Eriksen story right at the start. So you know, it's been really good. I think England have built into the tournament a little bit of criticism here and there, but you know, England can really, you know, look forward to the Germany game and Wales as well. You know, absolutely outstanding from Wales's point of view. I didn't think before the tournament got underway that Wales would even get out of their group, but they've surpassed expectations once again for me. Disappointing from Scotland's point of view, but yeah, it's been a fantastic tournament, and there's been a few surprise teams as well. The likes of Hungary, you know, really pushing to almost make it through their group, and you know, the likes of Sweden as well, I think, have caught people's eye. So there's plenty more to come.
Joe, I think the general mood around Euro 2020 going into it, I didn't feel as much excitement from people. I think due to the sheer relentless nature of the footballing calendar this year, it felt like, oh, not more football. But I've got, you know, into it. Have you?
Oh, 100%. That's right, though. I think looking into it before it started, it did seem like it might be one of those things where the players have been playing pretty much full whack for the last year, and you know, there could be kind of a lot of lethargic, tired legs, and it's not really been the case, to be fair. I think the five substitutes has definitely helped, the bigger squads, the rotating, you know, that has been possible. I think maybe, I don't want to jinx it, but maybe in the knockout stages we might see a little bit more kind of teams just out on their feet, especially if games go the full 120 minutes. But yeah, like Aidan was saying, there's been some amazing games. And I was just thinking about surprise packages. And I was looking at the Hungary thing last night, and they were only behind for 6 minutes across their 270 of their three group games. They're only behind for the last 6 minutes of the Portugal game. They were never behind against Germany and never behind against France. And I mean, yeah, coming into the tournament, no one gave them a prayer, really, but they're really impressed. Netherlands and Italy, for me, I think, you know, obviously they were in fairly straightforward groups, but they won them in, you know, impressive style. And I think it's set up really nicely. There's a lot of really interesting last 16 ties, and I think, you know, we'll see some much more exciting football to come.
Yeah, absolutely. It feels wide open, doesn't it? I know France were the early tournament favourites. They're drifting in the outright market slightly. So lots to play for. And let's jump into the last 16 games then. We'll be having previews of each of these from our two panellists today. Let's start with the first game. And it's Wales against Denmark at 5 o'clock on Saturday. This one from Amsterdam, live on BBC. Wales 4-1, the draw 9-4. Denmark odds on 17-20. Aidan, Denmark clear favourites, but do not write the Welsh off.
No, I don't think you can. I think this is going to be one of the tightest of the last 16, and I can see Wales getting a draw at, you know, taking this to extra time at the very worst from Wales's point of view. I quite like the odds on the draw, to be honest. I think, you know, before a ball was kicked in on this postcast a couple of weeks ago, I suggested that Wales would struggle to get out of the group because they only had two or three real, you know, top quality players in Gareth Bale and Aaron Ramsey. And those two have really stepped up, but other players have also really shone as well. You know, Joe Allen in midfield, plenty of other players for Wales have done really, really well. And I've been impressed with what I've seen from them. That win against Turkey, who admittedly Turkey have, you know, I think were some people's dark horses for the tournament before it even got underway, but they've been pretty dreadful, and obviously they've gone out. But that win over Turkey was absolutely fantastic. And you know, I think Bale and Ramsey have led from the front, and the rest have followed. And as much as you know, Denmark, there's a little bit of emotion with them considering what happened with Eriksen, and, you know, the fact that they, you know, won that final group match so well. A lot of people, you know, maybe neutrals will be rooting for Denmark in this, but I fancy Wales to at least take this to extra time. And then from there, anything could happen. That would be my bet in this match, though, the draw.
Yeah, Joe, I mean, Denmark, we know what's happened with them at the tournament so far. It's been a troublesome time for them, but they've done well to get this far. How do you fancy their chances here?
I'm really sweet on Denmark here. I'm going to have to go against Aiden. I think Wales, they lost the shot count across their three group games, 59-28.
Wow.
So their opponents had more than double the shots that they did. And Denmark have had the most shots in the tournament with 61. So I think Danny Ward, who's been a busy boy in the Wales net already this tournament, I think he could be in for another difficult night. I think they, you know, for a team that their game plan is to sit in and soak up pressure and hit teams on the counter, they're not very clinical. Like, they miss a lot of big chances in the group games. And I think that might come back to bite them. And I think another big factor that we haven't discussed is Danish fans are allowed to attend in Amsterdam, and the Welsh aren't. And we've seen, obviously, in Copenhagen how, you know, a big part they can play, the Danish fans. I'm really sweet on Denmark. I think they are the definite team to beat here.
Yeah, I know your colleague Mark Langdon was very sweet on them in terms of anti-Percy. He'll be glad that they've got to this stage. And yeah, short price about Denmark for the opening last 16 game. Let's move on to the next game on the Saturday, Italy taking on Austria. Now, Aidan, Italy were spoken about pre-tournament. I think a lot of people are saying, oh, they're the dark horses of the tournament. I'm not sure if you can call them dark horses. They're a short price now. But having seen their opening three games of the tournament, it's hard to say there's been a better side than Italy.
I think they have been the best side in the tournament so far. I mean, a lot of people were talking about France as being the favourites, and, you know, quite rightly going into the tournament, you could understand that. But France haven't been as good as people would think, and Italy have really stood up. I mean, you know, right from the first night, wasn't it? They were in that opening game against Turkey, and they you know, tore them apart really from start to finish. I mean, some of the stats about Italy are just they're sensational, really. 30th consecutive match without defeat when they beat Wales in their last group match. That was equaling a national record. They're on a run of 11 consecutive wins and have not conceded a goal in any of their matches. They made 8 changes v Wales, but they won that match 1-0. I know I've just talked about Wales, but, you know, Italy were comfortable in that game, really. And
you know, could it... their goalkeeper as well, didn't they?
Yeah, later on. Yeah, I think that was to do with Mancini. I think I read that Mancini had played in the tournament himself, and or he was at a tournament where someone didn't get any action, and he wanted to make sure that everyone in his squad got at least a couple of minutes or something. So, you know, that shows his man management as well. Mancini's been, you know, he seems to have got Italy working an absolute dream. That they work really hard, they press. Lorenzo Insigne is an absolute outstanding player. Spinazzola down the left hand side has been really good, and Ciro Immobile up front as well. But what I was just saying before was they made 8 changes against Wales. The players they brought in seem to be just as good. And now I know, you know, Wales is might have been a bit of a step down in terms of, you know, the other teams that they've been playing and whatever. But I've just been absolutely impressed with Italy. And I can only see this going the same way as all these other previous Italy games, by them winning to nil. I mean, I think you can get 11-10 on Italy winning to nil again, which, considering the run they've been on, I think is decent value. And Italy win, and I think they're going to keep progressing, and we may well see them going into the final or even going all the way.
Yeah, hard to look past Italy here, Joe, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I think they're everyone's kind of, you know, bigged them up, and they have played really well. But deep into the tournament, I would be a little bit worried about the high defensive line, and Chiellini and Bonucci, not the quickest centre halves. I think, like, it's set up really nicely for the quarter. If they, you know, I do fancy them to progress past Austria here, but it will be a great game whoever they play over, Belgium or Portugal. I completely agree with what Aidan said about bringing in the changes and them not looking, you know, any different. And Marco Verratti was, you know, outstanding against Wales. He just so good on the ball, and he chipped in with an assist. I think he didn't get man of the match, but I think he was a bit unlucky in that. And if he plays again, I would fancy him to have a real impact on the match. I think Mancini's been a huge factor for them. You know, he's probably, I would say, the best manager at the tournament, and he's just got them playing this system that, you know, they just don't seem like anyone can get near them at the minute. But
the thing is, yeah, Joe, you know as well as me that, like, when teams get on this a winning run and they don't concede goals, it becomes a habit. And it really does. Now, obviously, sooner or later, they're going to concede a goal and they're probably going to, you know, eventually they will lose a match. But it's a habit. It's a winning habit. We see it all the time. And they're going to be going into this match against Austria at Wembley. And the only thing that in their heads is going to be another win. And it might be a 1-0. It might, you know, but it might not be anything that impressive. But they just get the job done. They're like a machine. And that's the way it's going to go. It has to be, surely.
Yeah, I mean, Italy 9-20, the draw 16-5, Austria 7-1 for that game. So Italy clear favourites, and rightly so. Let's move on to Sunday then, 5 o'clock. This one in Budapest. It's Netherlands against the Czech Republic. Joe, you've spoken briefly about the Netherlands already in the postcast so far. They've been impressive, haven't they?
Yeah, I do think it's just kind of bigging up Roberto Mancini, but I do think a manager that deserves a lot of credit is Frank de Boer. He was really, like, not given much of a chance when he took over from Ronald Koeman, and he's changed the system slightly. And they played a kind of 4-3-3 in qualifying, and they've moved to a 3-5-2. And, you know, you've seen how effective the wing backs have been. Dumfries, obviously, been on the score sheet twice, and could have had a few more, to be honest with you. And Weghorst up front, I think Weghorst is a really interesting player because he gives a kind of focal point to that attack and allows Depay and Wijnaldum to kind of play off him. And I think he's basically just hit upon a kind of really good system for his players, and it allows them to kind of, you know, Wijnaldum, who was kind of a holding midfielder at Liverpool last year, has been unbelievable going forward. And yeah, the Czechs are going to really struggle here. I would be quite, I think Winter nil is knocking on 2-1. And yeah, the Dutch, I think, I'm a very big Dutch fan. I think they could well go all the way in the weak side of the draw. And they should have too much for the Czech Republic here.
Yeah, any hope for Czech Republic, Aidan?
No, I don't think so in this match. I did, again, in the postcast a few weeks ago, get asked who I thought was dark horses for the tournament, and I said Netherlands then before a ball had been kicked. I really like the look of their group with North Macedonia, Ukraine, and Austria in the group, and you know they've come through that really comfortably. And as Joe just said, Wijnaldum in midfield has been absolutely outstanding. Depay as well. He's only got 2 goals, but he could have had a couple more, and he's missed some chances. He's got his move to Barcelona now, so he's going to be absolutely buzzing. I really can't see anything other than a Netherlands victory. Maybe if we're looking for a bit of value, I mean, Netherlands to win both teams to score, going against what Joe just said, is about 5-2, I think. Holland have scored 8 so far. Czechs have got 3 goals in their 3 games, with Patrick Schick getting all 3, of course, including that fabulous goal from just inside the Scotland half, that you know, probably goal of the tournament. So they have got a bit of threat, the Czech Republic, but I just see Netherlands being too strong for them on the day. You know, maybe if we're looking for a bit more value, we could look at Netherlands to win both to score.
Yeah, well, the first 3 games there we've spoken about, all with clear favourites. We had Denmark 17-20, Italy 9-20, Netherlands 4-6. The next game, this is when it starts to get really juicy. It's Belgium against Portugal. Belgium 29-20, 9-4 the draw, 2-1 Portugal. Joe, this is a cracker.
Aye, this is a real cracker. And I think I can barely split them, to be honest with you. It is such a, because you look at the way they played in the groups, kind of, you know, Belgium got out of jail a bit against Denmark, and Portugal were obviously way under their level against Germany, but then stepped back up and played quite well, I thought, against France. They're probably a little bit lucky with some of the decisions that went for them. But I think Belgium, what would worry me for them is that back line, you know, very old, a lot of them, you know, you're looking at 30s plus, and then Jason Denayer, he's the young one in there, and he's not looked up to scratch, to be honest with you. I think both teams to score would probably have to be the player here, if you had to, because it is so difficult. I mean, One thing I think that might swing it, and it has me leaning Belgium slightly, is I just think Kevin De Bruyne is a cut above. I think he's probably the best midfielder in the world. And I think he could, you know, he's kind of, he wasn't able to play, obviously, all the group games because of that injury. And, you know, this is kind of last chance saloon for a lot of this Belgium squad. They know that they're reaching the end of their kind of golden generation. So, yeah, they're going to have to go for it. And yeah. And then Portugal are defending champions. So, yeah, it's a cracker. Both teams to score, I think, though, is the way I would play it.
Yeah, Aidan, it feels as if with Belgium, certainly in that game they had against Denmark, that they were poor in that game for large spells, but they just had the ability to flick the switch and turn things on with De Bruyne and Lukaku. And as Joe said there, this is the golden generation. There's so much expected of them. They're the number one rated team in the world, going up against the Portugal side, who had some thrilling performances and some, you know, some not so good ones. Yeah. Can you decide which way this is going?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because in the build-up to the tournament, again, you know, we saw a lot of people talk about France. A few people mentioned Italy. England, obviously, were mentioned as favourites. But not many people suggested Belgium could actually win it, certainly from what I could read. And as you say, they're the, you know, FIFA World Rankings number one team. I like Belgium to win 7-5 in normal time. But it is one of those matches that you think anything could happen. It's maybe one to I don't know, take a step back and not necessarily have a bet in, really, because you feel a little bit like with Portugal, especially in this tournament as well, anything could happen. You know, they went in front against Germany and then suddenly found themselves 4-2, you know, losing to a 4-2 defeat when they scored a couple of own goals in that match. 2-2 against France. There's been lots of goals in both of these games. So if I'm looking at something overall, I'm looking at over 2.5 goals at 11-10. I think I've seen that, because both teams have scored 7 so far. Belgium, a little bit like France, maybe you could even say a bit like England, haven't been at their best yet, but you feel like they are building into it. And certainly that Denmark performance, you're right, first half they were pretty poor and Denmark were the better team, but they just about got it done in the second half. I mean, you know, we've mentioned it, De Bruyne, absolutely world class. Lukaku has had a fantastic season for Inter and he seems to be carrying on with more goals. I mean, you know, as well, Eden Hazard as well, when he's at the top of his game, he's brilliant. I do take what Joe says about the defence maybe being a bit, should we say, getting to the veteran stage, but I think going forward they've got so much, and I think it could be anything this game, but I think my instinct is that Belgium will edge it, and I do like 7-5 for them to win.
On Portugal though, we've spoken a lot about Belgium, Joe. You can't look past Portugal here, can you?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, they, you know, and they do turn up in big games, like all the way through their last run to win the Euros. You know, they didn't play the best football, but they just kind of had that knack of, you know, relying on Ronaldo. And now they've got a much deeper squad. You know, you look at the likes of Jota and Diaz at the back, you know, and Fernandes in midfield. They do have a really deep squad. I when push comes to shove, I just think potentially they have one or two players that could be a little bit below that level. Semedo at right back, I know he had a good game against France, but he was really caught out against Germany. And I just worry sometimes that, you know, if you have Hazard on running at him, that could be a route that Belgium look to exploit them.
Absolutely. Yeah, let's move into Monday's games now then. And it's Croatia taking on Spain in Copenhagen at 5:00. Croatia 5-1, 27-10, the draw, 3-5, Spain. Aidan, what have you made of Spain so far this tournament?
Yeah, I mean, they kind of roared into life, didn't they, in that final match against Slovakia, winning 5-0. That's the biggest win of any team so far in the tournament, I think. So, you know, that shows that they're here and they're ready to play a full part. But those first two matches, they really dominated against Sweden. I think they had something ridiculous, like over 80% possession against Sweden, but couldn't get the goal that they deserved. And then Poland was frustrating when they, I think, were the better team as well, but drew 1-1, you know, with Poland. I don't think Spain are the world-class team that they have been in the past. And up front is where I do worry about them. You know, Alvaro Morata's not like anywhere near as good a player as, you know, other top teams have got in up front. He's very, very unpredictable. Gerard Moreno had a really good season for Villarreal. I think he scored 30 goals in Spain in all competitions. But is he good enough to do it on the international stage regularly? Ferran Torres has got 7 in 14 for Spain, but he doesn't really play as an out-and-out striker, and, you know, wasn't playing week in, week out for Manchester City. So I think that's their problem, scoring goals, even though they got 5 against Slovakia. But I think there was an own goal thrown in there as well, at least. So, you know, Slovakia obviously aren't as good as Croatia. I was, before the match, before doing a bit of preview for this, I was wondering whether this could be the shock of the last 16, and could we make a case for Croatia to win it? But I haven't been that convinced by Croatia either, to be honest. We know Modric is class. And they did step it up against Scotland, but, you know, Scotland isn't of the standard of Spain. Mateo Kovacic in midfield is great as well. And Ivan Perisic has scored a couple of goals already in this tournament. I think Spain will win. I don't think it'll be a classic. I'm looking at maybe a one goal winning margin for Spain at 11-5, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, other than that 5-0 Spain result, Joe, Spain have been fairly dull, haven't they? And it's hard to be in the Croatia camp either.
Yeah, it's a tricky game. I did think before the kind of draw was made, I would want to oppose any team that Croatia got, because I think they really haven't replaced Mandzukic, and they just lack that kind of killer instinct up front. And then they got Spain. I think one of the things that you potentially have to say about Spain is they might be more suited to playing in the knockout stages against teams that are more likely to have a go. You know, when teams, you know, Sweden practically sat on their 18-yard box and just didn't move from it. And that maybe Spain, if another team comes onto them, they'd be able to hit them on the counter. They've got Torres, they've got Dani Olmo, who I think is a good player. You know, they do have young, quick attackers, and potentially if Croatia kind of don't sit as deep as, say, Sweden did, Spain could pick them off on the counter. I'm completely unconvinced by Croatia, so I'd have to be with Spain. And I think, you know, the moments of magic from Modric against Scotland bailed them out of potentially, you know, not a great performance. I think, you know, Scotland had a couple of chances maybe that with a bit more international tournament now, saw a better finisher up front. Scotland could have easily got something out of that game. And yeah, I would have to have Spain win 2-0. I think at around 11-8, something like that, I think would be my angle.
Yeah, Croatia far from convincing so far. France against Switzerland is the 8 p.m. kickoff on Monday. France 8-15, 14-5 the draw, 6-1 Switzerland. Aiden, France were fancied, and rightly so, going into Euro 2020. They've drifted ever so slightly in the outright betting. Do you think they're still the team to beat?
After seeing their three games, I would be more inclined to say Italy now are the ones that are going to be the ones who might go on and win it. Also, you know, Netherlands, I think, have been really good. And France haven't been quite as good as people thought. I think Paul Pogba's been very good. You know, Antoine Griezmann working hard. He got a goal against Hungary. Karim Benzema as well, as you know, he's come to the party, and he's backing the goals as well for France. The disappointment is Mbappe's yet to score. And, you know, before the tournament was kicked off, I was suggesting Mbappe could be a top goal scorer bet, but he hasn't yet got in amongst the goals, but he has shown flashes of, you know, how good he can be in the matches. I think a little bit like England, France now, this is a bit of a turning point for them. And you know, we really need to see France put on a show here against Switzerland and remind everyone why they're world champions and why they probably, you know, still definitely can win the tournament. I think they will put on a decent show here against Switzerland. And I think I saw odds of 1-2, 8-15 for France to win it. I think, you know, that's not great value, but I would be really inclined to say France will win this match. I also think because he's that good, Mbappe is going to have to score sooner or later. So Mbappe anytime at 6-5 for me in this as well.
Joe, when I watched that first France game against Germany, although they didn't have too many shots, although they had a couple ruled out, didn't they? I just thought it was so disciplined and just beautifully kind of constructed. And I thought it was the perfect result for them. And ever since that point, I'm not going to say they've gone off the boil, but they've impressed me less. What have you made of them so far?
Yeah, I think it's part of the problem is they've made all of this effort to accommodate Benzema, and I just don't think he plays that well with Mbappe. I think they quite often make very similar runs. They're kind of, you know, when Giroud was playing up front, he would be more of a target man. Whereas Mbappe and Benzema kind of seem to get crossed wires. And I do think they've just got such a good squad that they'd probably be fine. And, you know, Deschamps plays a very kind of practical style. And I just think they can just do enough. I think I got the feeling in that last game against Portugal, because obviously they topped the group if it was a draw. I got the feeling that they were kind of like happy to just take the draw. But if it was the knockout stages, you might have seen them go up a gear. They didn't really need to in that game. Much like what Aidan said, really, I think Mbappe has to come to the party at some point. He's had such a good season. I think, yeah, Mbappe any time in France to win is about twos. I think that's decent. And also Switzerland, I just can't have really. I think another angle, if you like cards, Newcastle United's Fabian Schär has already been booked in the tournament, and he's just a bit of a liability. He can quite often go on kind of mazy runs forward and get caught out on the counter. So him to, I don't think it's been priced up anywhere, but him to be carded, I think, is one to keep an eye on.
Nice little booking angle. We always like to see them. Moving into Tuesday then, and here we go, the big one. England taking on Germany in the last 16 of Euro 2020. England 6-4, 11-5 the draw. Germany 19-10. Aidan, this was written in the script, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it takes us back, doesn't it, to Euro 96, England and Germany. I know that was a semi-final, but, you know, back at Wembley on what we hope will be a sunny day. The disappointment for me is that it's a 5 o'clock kickoff and not 8 o'clock, because there'll be lots of people like me who probably still be working at that time and might not be able to give it the full attention. But yeah, it's you know, it's a real mouthwatering prospect, isn't it? England v Germany, you know, all the history that goes with it. Like I sort of said earlier in the postcast, I think, you know, if this was any other team, we could look at England's results and we'd say, oh, they look like they're building nicely into the tournament. Because it's England, we're expecting to be let down, I think. And, you know, a 1-0 win over Croatia, where the first half was good, second half faded. The 0-0 with Scotland was an emotional game. And yeah, the performance wasn't as good as anyone expected. But you could maybe take that away and say that that's just like a bit of a one-off derby match. And then, you know, the victory over the Czech Republic, England again started really well. And then they, you know, you could make a real case to say that England just controlled that match and didn't, you know, exert themselves too much. And we always say teams build, you know, you need to peak in a tournament. And maybe England are doing this and we're going to see a really good performance against Germany. Or it's, you know, it could easily go the other way as well. And, you know, from a betting point of view, I'm really unsure about what to have a look at with this game. I think it will be tight, maybe under 2.5 goals, but it's not great value, that one. Because of the emotion in this match, personally, I don't think I'll be having a bet on it, because, you know, lots of people are suggesting it might go to penalties once again. And, you know, it's one of them as well, where there's so much emotion in it and we're just not sure what's going to happen. If you want my, you know, prediction for it, I think it'll be a really tight match and I don't think there'll be too many goals at 90 minutes. So under 2.5 would be what I'd be looking at.
England's tournament so far, Joe, I mean, no goals conceded. They've won two of their games, although by only a goal margin, fairly comfortably. And of course, the draw that's been talked about so much with Scotland. The feeling for me, though, with England is they do have the ability to turn things on when they want to. As Aidan mentioned there, against Croatia and the Czech Republic, like, there were spells in that game where we looked really, really good and then almost controlled it from there on. We obviously need to step it up against Germany. Do you think we have the ability to do so?
I think so. I think you've both mentioned the kind of key word, and that's control. I think Southgate has looked at, like, the Portugal team that won the Euros, the France team that won the last World Cup, and he's just prioritised kind of stability and control of games. You know, there was at no point in any of those three group games where you'd say, God, the other team are all over England. And I think he's, you know, sacrificed a little bit of the attacking talent by focusing on that. But yeah, I'm going to have to agree with what Aidan said. I think it's just going to be I think he'll probably play five at the back and try and match Germany's system. Germany's wing backs have been really good, particularly Gosens. And I think it could the draw, 23-10, I think we could be in for a long night. I think England, what would worry me slightly is like they've been in control of all these games, but we're yet to see what happens when they're out of control. If they you know, go 1-0 down after 10 minutes against Germany, can they pick the pace up and go on and score, you know, a couple of goals? I don't know if they're in such a defensive mindset that they might not be able to kind of flip the switch in that way. But I think the draw for me would be the standout. And then, yeah, extra time, pens. It's anyone's game, isn't it, really?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, looking at the outright betting, you've got France at 4-1, Italy at 6-1, and then England at 13-2. If you want Germany to win Euro 2020, you'll be getting around 7-1. So England fancied more than Germany in terms of the tournament in itself. And there's probably something to do with that route to the final, isn't there, Aidan? Because it's favourable for England if they get past Germany.
Yeah, I think it is. And I think, you know, that's right. You know, but getting past Germany is going to be difficult. I mean, you know, from England's point of view, Harry Kane hasn't, you know, there's been a lot written about him before the last match. He hasn't, you know, been involved as much, or certainly, you know, hasn't scored yet. And you know, he was better, I think, against the Czech Republic, but he's still not quite at the level that he showed for Tottenham. And I think if England are going to get past Germany, they need him to stand up just like the way Alan Shearer did all those years ago and be the main man up front and get England in front early on. You're right, in terms of the route, if England get through, it would be more favourable. I'm a little bit like Joe in that, you know, Southgate seems to be trying to set his team up to be defensive and not be be more difficult to beat rather than going out to win the match. And you just worry whether that will backfire. I mean, it's tight margins, isn't it? You know, England have won those matches by a goal to nil. But in all three of their matches, they hit the post early on. And if that goes in, then all of a sudden England are in front really early and could have, you know, the goals could have flowed. So we're at a real crossroads with England. I said it a few times. I think, you know, it's going to be either we go on from here and it's building up and perfectly, you know, peaking at the right time of the tournament, or we're going to get found out again and it's not quite as good as everyone thinks.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I pick up a newspaper or switch the radio on, Joe, all the talk is about Harry Kane. Now, I know he hasn't, you know, set the tournament on fire, but I don't think he's been terrible, has he?
No, I think, obviously, the supply, you know, whenever you're playing one up front, the supply is key, and he hasn't got the supply in the game so far. And to be fair, I think it's probably just a case of tiredness. I think if I was Gareth Southgate, I would have played Calvert-Lewin in the last group game. I think he just needed a rest, potentially. And he just hasn't looked as sharp as we all know that he can be. And one thing that would just worry me a little bit about England is, you know, that game against the Czech Republic, they didn't create any XG in the second half. Like, no chances, really. No, you know, I mean, they were in control of the game, but, you know, what's wrong with killing a team off? I think potentially that lack of killer instinct in the knockout stages could come back to bite them.
Yeah.
You know, you saw in the semi-final of the World Cup last time, Croatia just seemed to have more threat going forward. And England obviously have the players, you know. Going forward, they more than have the players to beat Germany. And Germany are very suspect at the back. You know, this is a team that we're beaten 6-0 by Spain this year. We're beaten 2-1 by North Macedonia. Like, it's not the world beater Germany of old. Like, England are rightfully favourites, but you just, it's that always holding you back is that thing of, you know, they've been here before, they haven't done it. They have looked quite defensive. But maybe Southgate thinks that's the route to, you know, putting to bed all of those games is, and all that history is to be a more defensive-minded team.
Joe, you're striking me as a man that's been ground down ever so slowly by England over the years.
Well, England and Newcastle, I've become very used to, you know, attritional football, let's say.
The thing is, you know, all the sort of, you know, not negativity, but like the defensive criticism in terms of like England being difficult to beat and you know, Southgate putting the emphasis on defensive stability will all be completely forgotten if England beat Germany and then go on and eventually win it. And, I can't see England getting past the likes of, you know, France or even Italy if it gets to that stage. But, you know, it doesn't matter, does it? You know, that 0-0 against Scotland will be completely forgotten if in the end it all turns out right.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. A massive game on Tuesday. Cannot wait to watch that one. And the late game on Tuesday is Sweden against Ukraine. Another tight one to split in terms of the prices. 5-4 Sweden, 11-5 the draw, 23-10. About Ukraine, I must say, Aidan, I haven't been too impressed with Sweden so far, and Ukraine have just been a bit wild, haven't they?
Yeah, I mean, out of all the games, this is probably the least glamorous one, isn't it? I think if we're looking at it, I think Sweden will win it. I think they're better than Ukraine, but it's hard to separate them, to be perfectly honest. I mean, Forsberg and Isak have caught the eye for the Swedes. Those two have both scored goals in the tournament so far. And, you know, looking at it, I've seen 13-10 on Sweden to win the match, 5-4 in other places. So, you know, that's not actual bad value, I don't think. And, you know, I think Sweden are the better of the two. Ukraine have somehow got to the last 16, you know, but they've not exactly pulled up any trees. Yarmolenko scored that good goal in that first game, and they did come back strongly against the Netherlands, but then ended up losing 3-2 and been, you know, edged out in another game and then just about got over the line. So I've not been impressed with the Ukraine. I think Sweden out of the two will win the match, but I doubt it will be remembered for much for any length of time this game.
No, Joe, what's your feelings with this one?
One thing I do think is remarkable is Austria must feel like, you know, they've got the short straw big time. You know, they beat Ukraine comfortably in that last group game, and for their sins, they get Italy in the round of 16, and then Ukraine scrape through as the third place team and get Sweden. So it's hard to bear really for Austria. Ukraine were really poor in that last group game, but I did, you know, there's green shoots there with Ukraine. I think one of the problems Shevchenko has is he can't really decide his best system. And, he took Malinovsky, who I think has been their best player, off at halftime against Austria, and I just didn't understand that. I think they do have the players that they can win this game. And at 23-10 is catching the eye. I just worry that, you know, he can't decide on his best team. Zinchenko's kind of not showing up. But I've been really impressed with Yaremchuk up front. I think he's been a real, like, standout player for them. And I think if you're going to get at this Sweden team anyway, Larsson and Lustig down that right-hand side, you know, 35 average age between the pair of them. They've got, I would even consider playing Yarmolenko on the left and just run at that Sweden right-hand side. I think that is the way that they're going to get through this game. Sweden, like you said, that, you know, they're good at what they do. They play 4-4-2, they sit in, they try and counter. It's going to be a funny game stylistically because Ukraine are more of a counter-attacking team as well. So I think it's kind of whichever team takes the initiative in the game could go on and win it. And I think Ukraine probably slightly better value because they can't. It was almost too bad to be true, that game against Austria. And I think if they can kind of get Malinovsky on the ball, get Yarmolenko, Yaremchuk, even Viktor Tsukhanov involved in the game, then they have the attacking players to definitely win it.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's the final of the last 16 games. 8 very exciting fixtures there across Saturday, Sunday, Monday and Tuesday. So thankfully, very soon, we'll have European football once again to watch on the telly. And of course, the big one, England-Germany on the Tuesday. A big thanks to Aidan and Joe for their insight this week. If you want more from them, then head over to racingpost.com/sport. There'll be comprehensive coverage of each of these games over there. So head over there and check it out. A big thanks to both of them. A big thanks to all of you for listening at home. If you are having a bet, please do remember to do so responsibly and within your means. We've given plenty of selections there, but you don't have to back all of them. That goes without saying. We'll be back next Thursday for another football podcast. But until then, stay safe and bye-bye.